We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Kelly.
With Matt Michaels, I'm Mike Kelly. Welcome to the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, brought to you by our friends at Shelter Insurance. Ask a Shelter agent about how now Shelter's auto policy includes roadside assistance. Learn more at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter. Missouri's scheduled to play a football game coming up this weekend, but it's not going to be against the Vanderbilt Commodores. It's not going to be against the Florida Gators. Third time is a charm. Looks like it's going to be against the Kentucky Wildcats, Mr. Michaels.
Yeah, why not? You know, do we have anything else to pull out of the grab bag? I feel like it's a bag of Scrabble tiles. You know, you pull it out there so you can't see it. I guess it makes the most sense to the folks in Birmingham who probably have a giant spreadsheet ready with all of the possibilities. But let it be Kentucky. Why not?
Grateful. Remember that word? Mm-hmm. Grateful. Grateful to get an opportunity. Of course, you know, the initial schedule was to play Vanderbilt. That got postponed. Then it looked like it was going to be on to the Florida Gators. That got transferred around. And so now the Kentucky Wildcats, who are playing really, really well, want to spend some time talking about what Mark Stoops has done. And I know Chris and I have talked about this literally over the last probably 5 years on every broadcast. They've won the last five against Missouri. Mm-hmm. But you just look and see what Coach Stoops has done in terms of building that program. And, you know, you go back, let's go back a couple years ago. In 2018, they go to Florida, and they win in Gainesville 27-16. It was the first time in 31 years that Mark Stoops' team was able to win in Gainesville. Then this past Saturday, they just absolutely dominated Tennessee. They win 34-7. They snap a 17-game losing streak in Knoxville. And the reason why I mentioned those two games is that, you know, part of establishing a program is being able to really knock down doors, cross hurdles. We saw Gary Pinkel do that, right, mm-hmm. during his 17-year career. We're seeing Mark Stoops and his team at Kentucky doing this time and time again. It's pretty impressive what they're developing down there.
Well, I think maybe for people who are longtime SEC followers, and Mizzou fans might not or might go in that category, Kentucky has had problems with sustenance. They've had problems sustaining the year or two run. Mm-hmm. Well, Mark Stoops has sustained what's going on in Lexington right now, and they have an identity. I think it was on display against Tennessee this past weekend, where they will use their defense to frustrate you and to turn you over and go ahead, take the ball, score it the other way, be efficient on those opportunities. I think the last 2 weeks show that Kentucky still has that DNA, and now Missouri's challenge will be, you know what they present. You understand what it should look like. Can you take it and turn it around against them and out-efficient, in a way, the Wildcats, because I feel like that's the way Kentucky tries to win ball games.
9-9 are nine interceptions in the last two games. They hold Mike Stoops, or they hold Mike Leach without a without a touchdown. I think it's the first time since he's been a Power Five head coach that his teams have been held without a touchdown. Then they had the two pick sixes and a third interception in three consecutive possessions against Tennessee this past weekend. And you know, you look at Mark Stoops. He's 46-46 now as the Kentucky head coach in his eighth season. He's 18-18 over the course of his last 36 SEC games. Now, let's go back a little bit. Do you remember the coach Blanton Collier at Kentucky? Sure you do. He coached from 54 to 1961. He's the last Kentucky head coach to post a winning record at UK. Bear Bryant from 1946 to 53, he's the last coach at Kentucky to post a winning SEC record. So the longtime Kentucky fan certainly appreciates what he's doing and what he's done. You know, he's an Ohio native. He's gone and he's recruited, you know, interior, tough, rugged offensive linemen from the state of Ohio. He's been able to get defensive players from the state of Florida, you know, big, rugged guys that can run. And you know what they do on both sides of the football? And this is what they're going to do on Saturday. They challenge your manhood on both sides of the ball. You know, not a flashy offense, but an offense that will run a lot of different zone-type plays. You know, they're averaging just over 206 yards on the ground per game right now, only giving up 100 on the ground. So this is a good football team. This is a good football team that could be, you know, they could be 4-0. You know, they're 2-2. They've won their last two, and so it's a fascinating matchup.
Well, I know at the end of game number one against Auburn, they were steaming, because at the end of that first half, there were all types of craziness where Kentucky looked like they made it across the goal line for a touchdown. Yeah. It didn't happen. And then Auburn went for what looked like a pick six the other way, and then a block in the back took it back, and everybody was upset at halftime of that first game of the season. And Kentucky should have another win because they doinked an extra point in an overtime against Ole Miss. And think of it this way, too. We saw Ole Miss and we saw all the credit given Arkansas's way for the way they handled the Ole Miss offense this past weekend. I mean, Kentucky was able to hang with that offense in that game in terms of getting its own points, which I think maybe even is a little bit more dangerous, because if they found their defensive side the last couple of weeks, if they have that offense that they had against Ole Miss, it's going to be a challenge for anybody to play a complete game against the Wildcats.
We're going to talk more about the league in just a second, but you know, Missouri coming off of an unexpected week off. I thought it was an important week anyway from a coaching standpoint, just to be able to come down off the highs of the LSU game and then get ready to play a Vanderbilt team. But, you know, now can you get everything done that you need to get done? Can you refocus and use that practice time the right way? No reason to think that they weren't able to do that. And then you think a little bit about, you know, who's going to be back. You know, and we don't know. We don't know yet who's going to be back. We think that a couple of receivers are going to be back. Don't think that Kobe Whiteside is going to be back. Don't think that Darius Robinson is going to be back. But, you know, can you get some skill position players back that had to miss the game the other day?
And if you get them back and they have a good week of practice and you see them mix in with some of the receivers we saw step up against LSU, I think that gives you – depth where maybe you were searching for it at the wide receiver position. Not to say that, you know, the likes of Boost Smith and Toski Dove and others were not capable, but they got their opportunity and they ran with it.
Most of it.
So Damon Hazelton, Kiki Chisholm, all right, add to that. Make it a competition in that room and see just how far you can take it. Because right now, I don't know how you feel about it, Mike, but I feel Missouri's strength is with Connor Bazelak and accuracy down the field. And wide receivers just need to make a catch and then one move, make a play, and all of a sudden you've got a quick strike offense brewing in Columbia, Missouri.
Well, and the offensive line has done, I think, a better job than most of us anticipated, given the fact that you had really three new starters on there, you know, with Maietti at center. And then, of course, the left side's been somewhat of a question mark going into the season. Delgado took over at left guard. He's been the guy. And then Zeke Powell came in. You know, after spending the night in the hospital before the LSU game, came in and played in the second half and was really, really good. And I know competition, back to your point about the wide receivers, I completely respect what Eli Drinkwitz says about every day, that's our number one core mission, is to come out and compete. And I get that. But I think production also is factored in. And you look at the productivity in just one game of a Boo Smith, of a Towski Dove, you know, of others that stepped up when they had an opportunity. And I think you, if anything, it adds to the depth. It mm-hmm. adds to the depth of what you've got at wide receiver. So, you know, it's a game that I don't think I haven't looked at a line. I don't usually look at a line. I'd be surprised if Missouri's favorite at home.
No, they're not. I think an early line I saw was Kentucky favored by almost a touchdown.
Yeah.
Which strikes me, honestly, as a little bit of a surprise the way Missouri played in its last game. But see, we all remember the last thing we saw, right? And we just saw Kentucky win a game.
And it doesn't surprise me, even though the win against LSU, because Kentucky, I think you could, because of the way the defense is playing, could be considered one of the hottest teams in the league. And you look at the series, Missouri won the first three games in the series when joining the SEC in 12, 13, and 14. Missouri hasn't beaten Kentucky since 14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, that's why I think I would understand, you know, that spread, if indeed that's what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, those things always change based upon the whims of certain people who are outside our pay grade or our area of expertise.
All right, let's go around the league a little bit. And I want to let's begin with Barry Odom. I mean, what they have done from a defensive standpoint over the course of the last few weeks at Arkansas has truly been very, very impressive. Mm-hmm. You know, Mississippi State lights up LSU. What does Barry Odom do? Sits back, plays a lot of zone, keeps everything in front of him, and they end up beating the Pirate. And then, you know, last week what they did against the Lane Train, and someone showed it to me, the trolling of the Lane Train by
that was pretty
the
great,
Arkansas
wasn't
Athletic
it?
Department with Thomas the Tank Engine. Somebody needs a raise. That was and for a guy that's not on social media, I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, all you need is the right clip and a little mask, and all of a sudden, away you go.
But, you know, give Barry Odom credit. You know, we know he's a really, really good defensive coordinator, and what he's done with this group has been impressive, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. You know, I was just digging into some of the numbers for Arkansas to see exactly where it rates, and it has to be up there in the top 20. Maybe the raw numbers don't get you all the way there, but I'm really impressed with the way that team that was, you know, they were, you know, scholarship player problems there. I mean, they got numbers that they have to deal with, and the types of players that were playing at the end of last season are the same players playing this season, and they're going out there and competing in the Southeastern Conference.
On the defensive side, on offense, though, you got a difference, too. You know, mm-hmm. you got a guy that in Felipe Franks that, you know, has got a lot of experience playing it and seems to have adapted really well with those around him and is playing very well. And he's got guys that are making plays for him, too.
You know, Felipe Franks, I always feel like his game is well suited to a more conservative style of play. And I don't say that as a knock. I think he can manage you to victories if you have a strong defense. And that's what Arkansas seems to have right now. And he's going to go out there and make some plays. Don't get me wrong, but he is the right fit for a team from the experience standpoint.
Why would you think
like
I was taking
about.
It the wrong way?
Well, no.
I was just sitting here listening.
No, I think that he has a lot of potential to win you a game, and he has a lot of potential to not be able to get you back from behind. And so you got to have a strong defense, I feel like, with that style of quarterback. That's not a knock to Felipe Franks. I think that's his game.
Okay, so let's continue as we kind of go around the league a little bit. Tennessee, as we said, got spanked at home. Jared Garantano, not a good day for a guy who has got as much experience as he's got. Some of the throws he made, it's like, again, what are you thinking? Mm-hmm. And then on Monday morning, it's announced that they fired – in his first year, four games into the season, their defensive line coach. Panic in Knoxville?
I mean, it has to be, right? Isn't that the definition? Of all the things that have happened this year, unless there is something inside that program that we do not know and we cannot see that is structurally wrong, why are you making that move now? What sense does it make? It boggles the mind. Yeah, it's a results-driven business, but what have we said from the beginning? Be flexible. You know, be flexible. If there's something that was such a problem, why didn't it happen last week or the week before? Mm-hmm. Did it just happen because you lost the game the way you did at home and people demand satisfaction? I don't know that that's the case. I just know it's extremely curious to be doing it right now. It feels like panic.
One of the columnists in Knoxville used the E word, said it's not talent, it's effort, and that's worse.
If it is.
It's kind of an indictment 4 games in.
Yeah, if it is, that's a problem. And it's weird. I feel like Tennessee's trajectory, Mike, has been very odd because right when they're getting a big win or two or stringing some wins together, it's, well, we all know the Tennessee is right there on the cusp, right? And we do know that. We've been talking about it here on the podcast. And yet, when that happens, you have to fight against things like complacency. You have to fight against things maybe like energy and effort. And I don't know what's going on in that locker room, but if it's being observed by folks on the ground there on Rocky Top, people are going to start asking those questions, and then do those questions swing to the other extreme at some point? I think Tennessee's so anxious for a winner, and sometimes you can get so anxious for a winner that it gets in the way of what's really valuable, which is sticking to the plan and building a program.
You saw the game on Saturday night, I take it?
I watched a little, yeah. Well,
thoughts on what you saw from the Crimson Tide?
I think Alabama can do that whenever it needs to, you know? It's weird because
I think they can play a lot better defensively than what they've played through to this point in the season. And
yeah.
Blanking Georgia in the second half and 2 big interceptions, certainly huge. But I still think that's a team that has even more to give from a defensive standpoint, which is going to make them all the more dangerous because of the – I mean, you had 2 receivers that were both at over 160 yards receiving. Mm-hmm. Najee Harris was over 100 yards rushing. Mac Jones was terrific throwing the football. When they needed – going in at the locker room at the half down and when they needed mm-hmm. to come out and make plays, it was a totally dominant second half.
Well, I think that's a sign of maturity, right?
Yeah,
you
I
know,
agree.
They had a week, and whether you want to say that it made a big deal or not, they had a week and finished the week of preparation without their head coach, Nick Saban, right? Even if he was virtually on the sideline one way or the other, he was in quarantine, and then negative test. All right, he's able to be on the sideline on Saturday night for the big game. But that team didn't really flinch from that. And if they did, if Georgia's best shot was in the first half and they flinched, well, then you see Alabama come out, and like you said, a couple of picks. You get a 90-yard touchdown, which it feels like only Alabama and maybe a handful of teams can pull out of their hat whenever they need to. It takes a very, very good team to give 60 minutes against Alabama to have a chance to win the game. It just is how they've been for so long, and all you can do is tip your cap at this point until somebody comes up and says, we can beat it.
Well, and you wonder, too, like from Georgia's perspective, now where are they with Stetson Bennett, quarterback? You know, are they now going to reevaluate – you know, his position, do they bring in the USC transfer Daniels? Those are all things that are being talked about right now. Mm-hmm. They've got playmakers. I mean, we know that about Georgia. They've got an offensive line that I think is very good. You know, and they can run the football. I thought they needed to run the ball more on Saturday, mm-hmm. you know? Particularly when Alabama started getting a little bit more momentum. It just seems like they still wanted to throw quite a bit.
Yeah, well, I think this is probably the modern college football quandary of our time. Because you've seen it happen as the game has evolved.
Quandary on me.
Well, it is. Because everybody runs wide open. And you see it in the NFL sometimes, too. Everybody wants to run wide open, and everybody wants to be multiple, right? But sometimes the best thing you can do is say, we're stronger than you, we want it more than you, and let's get 4 yards in a cloud of dust and do it again, and do it again. And there are certainly teams that still play that way, but I think the bulk of teams at the highest of levels want to have this passing offense because you can score on the drop of a pin. And sometimes you have to go back to your roots a little bit, especially when you've got a little bit of momentum, a little bit of a lead. You got to milk that clock and make it tough for the other guy, make the other team execute in less time. And maybe Georgia did not do that the way they could have on Saturday night.
I remember watching a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, and Hal Heflin, the former senator from the state of Alabama, said the following words: "Mr. Chairman, we've got a quandary." And that was I think that might have been my introduction to the word. And then it might have been the last time I heard it until just a couple moments ago. Yeah, but anyway, quandary.
Sometimes it just comes out of left field.
Yeah.
Through one ear, through the mouth, and then out the other.
What else stood out?
You know, it stood out.
How did Florida do? I can't remember. You know, did they have 90,000 in the swamp?
Stood out that it was a league without two games.
Wait, was there 90 in the swamp this weekend?
90 people, maybe, no, like 90, cleaning
000.
Up. Oh, no, I didn't see them. I didn't see them.
Tone deaf Dan, did he win that 90? Karma's got a way of coming back and biting you there, Matt Michaels.
I tell you what, after I saw over the weekend that Dan Mullen said, yeah, I had a positive COVID-19 test. Yeah. I wish the best for Dan Mullen, I mean, if you believe in karma, some people will say, yeah, all right, I guess so. We'll find out very quickly what that Florida team's made of, huh? Because we know that offense is very good. We know they have a lot of weapons. We also know that they're coming off defeat, and we know that they now have a different schedule than they had initially hoped for when it comes to their season. I look at Halloween night, and I think the witching hour could be besetting the Florida Gators. If Missouri starts handling its business with consistency week in and week out, I think the SEC East, Mike, I think after Georgia loses to Alabama, it's still open. Georgia's the best team, but this is a reason why you play the games in 2020, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, the other thing that Georgia's going to point to now is Georgia and Florida is that they normally have a week off before the cocktail party.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee's got third Saturday in October, so guess who they have this weekend? They've got the Crimson Tide. You know, so I think that's a game that they won't win. I'd be shocked if Alabama were to lose that game. South Carolina's playing better.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing that kind of stood out is, you know, look at what's happening in Columbia, South Carolina. And they're doing it on both sides of the ball, too. Shy Smith might be one of the most – well, outside of the two kids from Alabama and Pitts, the tight end from Florida, is there a receiver that's having a better season than Shy Smith right now?
Probably not. And he's got a world of talent that he can put to use if he has the ball in his hands. And maybe sometimes the struggle has been for South Carolina at times, get the ball in Shy Smith's hands. I want to go back to the box and just see how good it was. 76 yards and a score, easy, on 8 catches, so a volume guy, too. They're going to look his way. The team that plays South Carolina has to think about Shy Smith, what, first, second, and third, right?
Steve Sowers is voraciously trying to point out to us that that's the first win for South Carolina over Auburn since 1933.
Yeah. Do you think Auburn's struggle right now is that they're good in a lot of areas but might not excel at one? I wonder if that is a little bit of the case. And if they're going to be excellent, it might be with Bo Nix in the passing game if he gets it going.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen enough of Auburn to really make a informed determination of what I think of them. I do think, as you know, it's a fan base that has high expectations. It's a fan base that has a little envy. You know, it's kind of like Missouri basketball fans have got envy of Kansas, right? They just do. I mean, because of what's happened over the years, Kansas owned the series. Kansas has won national championships in the sport of basketball, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think Auburn, you know, obviously, you know, has got a little envy on what's taking place down in Tuscaloosa.
Mm-hmm.
So do they put unrealistic expectations on a head coach? Probably. I think the rest of the year with Auburn is going to be interesting to watch just in terms of does Gus Malzahn become more and more of a focal point as the year goes on. And because it seems like every year, you know, about this time of year, it's, well, is he the right guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly among that Auburn fan base.
Yeah. And I don't know how long questions like that can be asked and be tenable. I mean, if you asked somebody about the stereotype of a Southeastern Conference program, you might look that direction when it comes to the coaching questions, because they always seem to be there for a man who has always had Auburn competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, there's never been a time when Auburn has not been considered one of the better teams in the Southeastern Conference, and yet all it takes is one slip-up, and then the question's still asked. Maybe those questions are surrounding the offense. Auburn total offense today, 366.8 yards per game. You'd think, all right, that's not so bad. That's 10th in the SEC, Mike. And for Malzahn, who came in as the offensive wunderkind, and unfortunately, Missouri fans understand firsthand in 2013 just what the limits of that offense can do when they stretch it and they get it all the way rolling. Whenever that offense underwhelms, I feel like Auburn fans start saying, man, this is the guy we have here to take us to new heights offensively, and we struggle, we hit our head against the ceiling, or we see Alabama, which is, I think, in the top five in the country in total offense right now. It all plays into one another, and you do ask questions about how long it's going to last down there on the plains, because how can you pull forward if the questions are there every year? I don't know.
Well, and the other thing, let's go back to South Carolina just for a moment. The other thing, too, that you look at is they've made a lot of staff changes, you know, over the years. And Mike Bobo comes in as their offensive coordinator. And obviously doing something right now with that offense. And, you know, he's got a playmaker, obviously, in Smith, and as we've talked about. But, you know, that's one of those hires that I'm not sure that, you know, coming back to the league, former head coach of Colorado State, I think people, you know, say, he's back. I kind of gave it, he's back. But obviously he's done a pretty good job in a short amount of time.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because I feel like at a lot of places – the coordinator position is, well, do you have experience in this league, right? Because everybody says the SEC is built different. And sometimes when you come back and you feel like, you know, a warm pair of slippers or something, maybe people forget about it. Mike Bobo made his name in the Southeastern Conference before he went out west and took that head coaching position. He obviously knows a little bit something about the game. Folks in Fayetteville, Arkansas today are singing Barry Odom's praises. Why? Because he obviously knows how to coach defense. You know, these people are very, very good at their jobs. And the difficulty is finding a way to be very good at your job every single week more than everybody else who's good at theirs. It's a tough, tough haul.
Well, and sometimes if you give a guy a coach, I mean, there's some coaches that are made to be coordinators, not made to be head coaches necessarily. You know, there are some coordinators that you just know are going to be destined to be a head coach because of their ability to manage things and promote their program and sell and things like that and be able to handle the full compass of what's expected of the head coach. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for a guy like Coach Odom, who, you know, his singular focus each and every week is that defense, that's a dangerous proposition for teams that Arkansas has to play because he can dial up a pretty good game plan week in, week out.
Does Texas A&M feel it's back after outlasting the Pirate?
You know, I'm just not sold on Texas A&M. I know Jimbo Fisher's got a national championship. That's great. But there's just something that seems more all fluff, no substance, you know, with that program. And I'm trying to put my finger on it, exactly what it is, but it just – I don't see them as a legitimate power in this league. You know, right now you look at the West, probably the second best team in the West, I guess. So maybe you give them that right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yeah, they upset Florida. I don't think they can beat Georgia. You know, I don't think they beat Alabama. They didn't beat Alabama. So I don't know. And maybe I'm being too harsh in my judgment, but there's something about, I don't know.
You could have said all hat, no cattle, and then they'd really have the alarm bells going off in College Station. That would send everybody in a tizzy. They wouldn't know how to react to that.
Yeah, well, what about Texas? I mean, you know, I don't even want to talk about that. Back after this on the Inside Mizzou Athletics Podcast presented by Shelter Insurance.
Some of my fondest childhood memories are from volunteering with my grandmother. Helping others was her passion. She'd always say, "The sweetest fruits of life come from serving others." And she was right.
At Shelter Insurance, we strive to make a positive impact in the communities where we work and live. For your auto, home, and life, find an agent at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter.
Matt and Mike back on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, presented by our friends at Shelter Insurance. Ask a Shelter agent how Shelter's auto policy now includes roadside assistance. Learn more at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter. So when the schedule came out, and you saw that Missouri was going to play LSU and that they were going to play Alabama, I was not surprised. I mean, you know, looking at what the guys in Birmingham were going to do does not surprise me whatsoever. That's the cards that Missouri was dealt with. Now here we are several weeks into the season, and you look at the schedule and you say, you know, you got through those first three against nationally ranked teams, got an unexpected bye week. Now you host Kentucky, good team, but certainly not a game that you can't win if you play well in all areas of the game. Then you go to Florida. Then you get your bye week that you thought was going to happen. My point is it's going to actually play out pretty well for Missouri in the long run, even after having to face LSU and Alabama.
You know, I was thinking the same thing this morning.
Is that scary that we were thinking the same thing?
I don't know. Is that a mind meld or something? I mean, there's supposed to be a difference of opinion because that leads to argument and then, you know, the ratings go through the roof. But I think we were thinking the same thing because this extra bye week, you talked about this week being the most important for Missouri to come off of a high, or if they were to lose the game against LSU, to rebound off of a low. And they're on the high. And so now you get to bring the temperature down a little bit. Everybody gets to settle in and say, okay, we're at this spot right now where we have a big win. We cannot rest on it. Look at the team that's coming in next and look at the role they are on. We will have to redouble our efforts to be able to beat Kentucky. And then after that, we might have to do even more to beat Florida. But you know what? It can be done. I'm sure Eli Drinkwitz is thinking about this right now. How do I motivate my team going into game one and then game two? And a game two where I think, Mike, and you know, as long as we're speaking frankly, I think Florida has a hard time looking at Missouri in that game and saying, oh yeah, we're 100% there for the Tigers. If they are, credit to Dan Mullen and credit to them. But they're looking at November the 7th. That's their bread and butter. That's the game that they're told every year you win this game, you get to go to Atlanta. Well, Missouri's in an opportunity now with that extra rest and that extra preparation where they might be able to do this two-step and find their way in the middle of that conversation. I think it broke down really well from that perspective for the Tigers, and now we just get to see what they do with it.
There's a couple of numbers that, for me, just jump off the page when you look at Missouri right now, particularly from a defensive standpoint, is where I'm kind of focused. So you're giving up more than 300 yards a game right now passing the football, but six sacks. Only six sacks in the first three games. No interceptions. And only one fumble recovery.
Yeah.
You know, this is a defense that really has to start, you know, finding ways to get the football through takeaways and to set its offense up. And, you know, splendid, phenomenal job by Ryan Walters and his staff on that last possession against Florida, particularly the last four plays of the game. But I think they too would also say, man, we got to figure out a way to get takeaways because it's just not enough. And you got to get more pressures on the quarterback and more sacks. I mean, this is a team that was last in the league a year ago in sacks. And that's something that just kind of because I think as fans, rightfully or wrongfully, we have the expectation because of the litany of players that have come through this program before that you're going to have guys that are going to be able to put pressure on the quarterback and get sacks and things like that. And I think you're seeing a guy coming into his own in Trajan Jeffcoat, which is huge. You know, and Trey Williams has got to follow suit and then, yeah, you know, go from there.
I think that thematically and schematically, Missouri has done a little bit different this year to try to get more of that pressure. Because you see the rush linebacker position that Trey Williams occupies, that's one different look at it. I've seen a lot more stunting. I've seen trying to get guys loose inside the middle of the line to find a way. I think Isaiah McGuire, didn't he have a sack on a stunt in the center of the line
earlier
this year?
Yeah, well, just in this last game against LSU. And here's a kid that, you know, 6'5", 280 pounds, and they're playing outside, but he started inside, mm-hmm. you know, this past game against Louisiana State.
Yeah. I think that where it comes from at this point doesn't much matter, but it has to come.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
And you've had guys defensively, you go back to your point schematically, you've had guys in the secondary that have been in a position to make plays.
Mm-hmm.
Got to make plays. Lock up the ball.
You know? Yeah. And it's one thing to say, all right, I've got my man covered, and that's good. It means that you're keeping the offense in check. You're not allowing the big plays down the field. It then is another level to say, all right, that ball is mine. And when you can make those plays and make them with the proper level of aggression, you don't want to be too risky or over-aggressive, you change the game for your team, and you give a margin of error to an offense that, well, the last time we saw it play, performed pretty well with little margin for error, but that's no guarantee as you go through the rest of the season. And other SEC teams inevitably are going to turn you over. You'll make mistakes. If you can create them the other way, it only gives you more confidence going through the season that you're playing as a full football team.
3 o'clock start this weekend, and Missouri will entertain the Kentucky Wildcats at Ferrell Field in Columbia. Basketball practice is underway.
Mm-hmm.
Got underway last week. It's interesting, though. Basketball is underway, but no schedule yet. they don't have a schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to show you the I maybe patience is the word to use, the proper word, the tactful word. But it is interesting that we know the Kansas game is not going to happen. That's pushed back for a year. You know, Kansas does not want to play it. And it appears that the Bragg and Rights game is not going to happen either, which would be that first time in quite a while, mm-hmm. obviously, that hasn't taken place. But I think it just goes to show you the processing, and we've used this word before, this phrase, processing of information, the amount of information that, you know, they're going through on each individual campus and in Birmingham. And trying to come up with some kind of a schedule.
Yeah, and I think it's a real challenge. I feel like college basketball, Mike, has been very novel in the way they've tried to handle these things with these multi-team events that have been reported across the country mm-hmm. for non-conference, just to get those non-con games in. And Konza Martin said on a media call last week that he thinks the Tigers will be in Orlando for one of those, but it's not locked down. So you have to wait until everything's official, the T's and the I's, and then you get into it and say, all right, here's our opponents, here's where we go. I'd expect it to be soon. Yeah. I mean, we've got about a month until Thanksgiving when this occurs, but I think the college basketball has done its best in light of an uncertain future, and even then, does the future become so uncertain at some point that plan has to be scuttled? We hope not. I think that they've worked under a belief that, hey, we're going to need to be in one place at one time and testing everybody for COVID and keeping a bunch of different stakeholders to the same standard to try to keep everybody as safe as possible. And that challenge with a winter that is certainly uncertain, according to the health experts, that adds an extra layer on top of it. So it doesn't surprise me that there's no schedule, because how do you plan all those things at one time? It's never been done before.
Well, if you start in depending on what the schedule looks like, and who knows, and even moving forward, I'd make this suggestion that if you're all in the frame of mind that because of what has happened to budgets across the country because of COVID, right, the most, not PHY, the most FIS, fiscally responsible thing to do moving forward with, I think, college football or college basketball in particular, and college football, if you get back to non-conference, keep it local. Play as many, you know, within driving distance teams as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from a college football perspective, it's going to be interesting. If you start playing non-conference games, what happens to that bye number, which was ridiculous?
Yeah.
Had gotten to the point over $1 million buys. I mean, ridiculous. Okay. So then, and you know, the six-figure deals or however many, what's the size of the deals on the bye games and on basketball? Maybe instead of playing a Utah, you know, on the road or somebody else on the road from a Power Five, maybe you start playing an Illinois State, or you play a Southern Illinois, or you play a St. Louis University, or I don't know, but I think those are things that if you're being fiscally responsible, I think those are things you got to look at.
I think they're things that are certainly being considered.
And in both sports, men's and women's.
Yeah, and I feel like those are always kind of considerations across the gamut of college athletics, but because, you know, men's and women's basketball and college football have a different financial landscape, it affords different opportunities. And who wouldn't want to give a student athlete that sort of opportunity to play that sort of game?
Have or had?
Well, that's the question now, yeah. Right? Like, if the answer is had, then you go back to your roots. And I think college basketball will take a look at that for sure. And for the upcoming season, college football at the highest of levels will have to take that look, right? Yeah. Because we know the impact of having no fans in the stands in terms of, oh, it's a bummer, or reduced capacities and all the rest. Good that there's an opportunity to do that safely, as far as we understand, at a few places that are allowing it, and Missouri is one of them. But what that means to your bottom line, I don't think is unearthed yet in the least. And that means you'll have to have changes.
Well, and the other figure, too, that is still certainly not published and certainly, I think, still a moving target, is how much money a month are college football programs losing? Think about that. How much money because of the amount of testing that's taking place on a consistent basis by rule to be able to have the opportunity to play? I mean, how much because of salaries, because of other operating expenses, and limited schedule, limited fans that are able to come into the game, how much money is college football losing a month? And that's a number that I think it's going to be staggering if it's ever revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just here. I think it's across the board.
Yeah. It's a difficult thing to change so quickly what your financial model or projection is for a sport like big-time college football.
Now, the one thing you do have, big-time college football, you still got that TV check.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps quite a bit. But if you remove that and you look at that number,
it's going to be significantly different.
Yeah, it would be eye-opening. So, got anything else you want to talk about today? Come on, give me something. You got something on your mind.
I got to say.
Tampa Bay into the World Series. You're excited about that?
I was going to go right there with Peter Fairbanks, by the way. Pete on the hill for the save.
On the bump.
The bump. The mound. The pitching plate.
Don't they say that in Chicago? On the bump.
Well.
Johnny on the bump.
Yeah. Hawk likes to say the bump.
Okay.
I don't know what Hawk, he also talks about the can of corn. And I think people today don't understand what the whole can of corn is about. Can of corn is because once upon a time, you had the can of corn on the high shelf at the grocery store, and you had to ask the clerk to come with a stick, and they would knock the can of corn, and you have to catch it like the can of corn.
So,
but if Pete wins, it would be 2018 Ian Kinsler, Mizzou baseball product with the Boston Red Sox, World Series champion. 2019 Max Scherzer with the Washington Nationals, World Series champion. Could be Peter Fairbanks in 2020. You could go back to 2016 with the Chicago Cubs, and Rob Zastrzyzny, Mizzou product, has a ring there. So you could have four Mizzou baseball products in 5 years end up as world champions. I don't think that's too bad.
So Tampa Bay wins a cup in the World Series, and Tom Brady and his group just handed the Green Bay Packers, and I love to say this to my neighbor, Boyd French, the overrated Green Bay Packers, their first loss of the season. So kind of happy times down in Tampa Bay.
In Tampa and L.A.? I mean, there's a chance that every major
sports champion. What happened in the Lakers?
Lakers won, and now the Dodgers play Tampa. So three of the four major North American pro sports championships in this year go to either Tampa Bay or L.A., and between, as much as some people might hate to hear me say it, the Los Angeles Rams and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm not going to say there's not a chance they have a clean sweep across those two.
Did you see that Sid Hartman passed away? Do you know who Sid Hartman was?
I did see, but I did not really know.
Sid Hartman was a legendary figure in sports in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis. Longtime columnist. But the fascinating side of the story is that he was the person responsible for bringing the Lakers to Minneapolis. He was the one that started that process. And I had a chance to meet him years ago when he still traveled and covered Minnesota sports when they once played at the University of Illinois. Lauren Tate, who's been the longtime columnist in Champaign, introduced me to Mr. Hartman. And so 100 years old, what a life, you know, and, you know, was a guy that continued to write for a long, long time. So anyway, sad to see him pass away. But what a remarkable life, and 100 years, man.
Yeah.
If I could sign up for that today, I'd say,
yeah, put your name on the dotted line for 100. Absolutely. Get me there.
Yeah. So we got volleyball coming up, right? They're going to play at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the schedule is for the middle of this week. So okay. Hopefully everything goes well there.
And, home road, where are they?
It's Alabama. It's at Alabama.
So they're going down to T-Town.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess that's it for them.
Yeah.
Until basketball starts up.
Yeah, about here. Soccer continues going. They had a draw.
That's right.
Over the past weekend, senior night at Walton Stadium, as they're coming around. They're playing these tight defensive games. I watched the end of that. It was very exciting. Mizzou had a couple of chances to sneak that win away from the Bayou Bengals. They couldn't quite do it.
Big game coming up on Saturday. Big opportunity for Missouri, and so we hope that Tigers are up to the challenge and can find a way to win. For Matt Michaels, I'm Mike Kelly. Thanks for listening to the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast presented by our friends at Shelter Insurance. Subscribe to it, tell a friend, and we'll see you next week.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Mike Kelly, brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.